Good evening. We want to welcome everyone to this wonderful evening. We'll have an opportunity, as the program will be introduced, but I want to first introduce the person who spearheaded the whole vision for tonight, and that is Rabbi Volk. Rabbi Volk is the Executive Director of American Friends of Karen Biavne, but he's also a colleague, as he is the Rav of Young Israel of Merrick. It's a tremendous opportunity, and we appreciate his effort to galvanize tonight's program, which I think you'll find quite insightful. So, Rabbi Volk.
It's indeed a pleasure for Karen Biavne to be profiled this evening in conjunction with this rabbinic forum. And I'm very grateful to my colleagues and my friends, to Rabbi Shalom Axelrod, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, Rabbi Yaakov Trump, and Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky. I believe that the topics that will be discussed tonight are very thought-provoking, inspiring, and exhilarating. With appreciation for all of you who've come tonight, it's my pleasure to call upon Rabbi Kamenetsky, who will be our moderator.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Volk. Anytime Karen Biavne asks me to be involved in something, I feel like I have no choice but to agree. The truth is that tonight we're very, very excited. I'm speaking to the other Rabbanim. We all feel the same way. We have tremendous hakaras hatov to our yeshiva. And tonight we're speaking a little bit about issues that confront modern orthodoxy. And I think it's so appropriate that Karen Biavne is hosting tonight's evening. Certainly, the rabbis up here on the stage, I know, all feel that we got such a tremendous foundation in Karen Biavne for our worldviews that have, of course, been refined and developed since then, but the most major and foundation, the foundations of our worldviews certainly were formulated in a very large way at Karen Biavne, with all that we experienced during our years, the incredible atmosphere in the Beis Medrash, interacting with our Israeli roommates and seeing their dedication, serving in Tzahal, and simply being in Israel, in Karen Biavne, seeing the land, being part of that year or years in Eretz Yisrael, certainly were so fundamental to our experiences. And that's why I know in discussing with the other Rabbanim, we all feel such hakaras hatov to the yeshiva, and that is certainly what brings us here tonight. I really assume that the people sitting on the stage don't really need any formal introduction to all of you who are sitting here. However, even some things that don't need to be said, sometimes one should say. So first of all, of course, we thank Rabbi Axelrod, the rabbi of the Young Israel of Woodmere, for hosting tonight's event. Rabbi Axelrod certainly put a lot of the technical details of this together as well. We also thank and welcome Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, the rabbi of the Beis HaKnesses of North Woodmere, and also a rebbe at the DRS Yeshiva High School for Boys. Got to plug that in while we can. And we thank him very much for coming. And, of course, Rabbi Yaakov Trump, assistant rabbi. Did I get that right? Okay. Assistant rabbi at the Young Israel of Lawrence Seedhurst and also at Yeshiva University, working for REITs in their public programming department. Really a special opportunity tonight. I know for me, I don't know about you. Luckily, I just get to moderate, so I can listen. But certainly a great opportunity for all of us to hear inspiring words. So the format that we chose for tonight is as follows. Each of our three rabbis are going to present, I'm going to pose three questions. Three of some of the large questions that are facing the modern Orthodox community nowadays. I'm going to pose three questions. We're going to pose one question to one rabbi, the second question to the second rabbi, and the third question to the third rabbi. We're going to ask each rabbi to give one primary response. If any of the other rabbis would like to add to that one response, we'll hear from the other rabbis. As moderator, I could always take the take the privilege of maybe sticking in my two cents as well, if I feel like I have anything to add. And then at the end, after the three questions have been addressed, we will open up the floor for questions, either questions on the questions that we raised or other questions connected to issues confronting modern Orthodoxy. We ask everyone to stick within that topic. Hopefully you could stick within that topic. So without further ado, we'll begin. Rabbi Axelrod is going to be the first respondent, and here is the question that we would like Rabbi Axelrod to respond to. Often we talk about the big tent of modern Orthodoxy. Given the wide spectrum of religious paths within the modern Orthodox community, from those who identify right of center to those who define themselves as open Orthodox, can we continue to keep up the big tent without losing our identity as a viable Torah camp within Orthodoxy? Rabbi Axelrod.
So I think it's actually quite noteworthy that we're having this gathering tonight to discuss contemporary issues dealing with the modern Orthodox community. Partially, and some of those remarks I'm going to talk about in a few minutes, but there was a gathering Sunday night also for people for Orthodox, Renaissance, and Torah, and the statement was, we are here to make modern Orthodoxy modern again. So I think the fact that there was another gathering to discuss about making modern Orthodoxy modern again clearly identifies that there's a certain issue within the community, and that issue now is being discussed. And I think this particular question in terms of, so to speak, the big tent, I think to address it, it's necessary to give a little historical, perspective. Obviously, there are certain tenets of what it means to have a modern Orthodox vision of life. First and foremost, we also often talk about a commitment to commitment to Torah and mitzvos, but more than just a commitment to Torah and mitzvos, it also encompasses a certain worldview, as opposed to, and it's defined, it has been defined through the years in different ways. There was the Torah-only approach, and then there was tied, Rabbi Danziger put forward this idea of Torah Derech Eretz, Torah Umada, Torah Va'avoda, all those various formulations, including actually the original concept for Torah Vedas. But the original, the understandings of any of those formulations is that somehow it's Torah in a broader perspective, one that engages the larger world. And there are many details, there are many facets of what that level of engagement includes. It obviously includes a pursuit of secular knowledge on a lichatchila basis, this pursuit of professional life, not just as a means of parnasa, but that there's Torah's Chaim and that there's an engagement with a broader world that can enhance, whether you use the words of synthesize or any different type of word that incorporates the concept that there's something of meaning in the outside world, and our engagement with that can make us better Torah observant Jews. That also includes part of that broader perspective is how we relate to both the unaffiliated Jew, the non-observant Jew, and also in terms of our relationship with the larger Gentile world, the human world that surrounds us. And then the other facet of it was religious Zionism. Now, for many, many years, that was like sort of not questioned, and YU, with the figurehead being the Rabbi Yosef Ber Soloveitchik Ol Shalom, Zechut Tzadik Livracha. So that was the basic system. And this was the community. And as a community, yes, there were times where there were certain individuals or potential would-be movements that would maybe try and get started. However, that was never really developed. What has changed in the last 20 years is two different dynamics, two different aspects. What we'll call a push to the right, and we'll call a push to the left. The push to the right is that a large segments of the modern Orthodox community is that there's just a stronger commitment level. There's greater levels of passion. There's greater mitzvah observance. This is not saying right or wrong. This is just the facts. The facts is more people in the Manoachic community are checking their clothes for shatness now than they were doing in the 1950s. And so there was a tendency for other aspects of Talmud Torah, certain things, that we'll call it a push to the right. Not saying, not making a judgment call, but as the community, and there were certain reasons for this. We had our students going to spend a year of intense study in places like Yeshiva Keren Yavne and all the other wonderful seminaries and yeshivot in Eretz Yisrael that basically educated an entire generation in terms of greater commitment more taking, I would say, one's mitzvah performance and observance more serious. There was also the advent of the same-sex modern Orthodox high school. Back in the day, it was Central MTA and BTA, and now we're blessed with almost every community in the metropolitan area has a same-sex modern Orthodox high school for boys, for girls, some of them in our community blessed to have multiples of them. And there's a certain level of chinuch that's being presented there on a much wider basis than it used to be. And so these are the, so to speak, the factors that are pushed to the right. What's the push to the left? So the push to the left is, first of all, there's a greater force of the outside values. The 1950s, 60s, and perhaps it started to change in the late 60s, the outside cultural milieu of America was not so antithetical to the worldview of a modern Orthodox Jew. But all of a sudden, that changes, especially, and it's been changing, and it's changing at light speed. Because now, you know, just our notion of who should use what bathroom is just out there in, as a value. And if I'm a modern person, and I inculcate these values purely with me, within me, so it becomes difficult, that balance. And then ultimately, you have institutions now. Something that never happened before, you have Torah, or claim to Torah, institutions that are pushing an agenda, that are pushing a certain vision, as we said, to make modern Orthodoxy modern again, all the organizations that were involved in that particular, I'm not going to name them, but we all are well aware of those types of organizations. And what ends up happening is that because of this, there's now almost a competition for the soul, if you want to call it, for the soul of modern Orthodoxy. And it's not just no longer a machlokes over Torah only or Torah Derech Eretz. It's not Rav Aaron Cutler in the 1950s where Lakewood was saying that it's usher to go to college. That's not the battles. And the battles are on issues that really define some of the basic elements of a community. So just to mention them, conversion. In other words, how do we accept Gerim? This is a very major issue in terms of the role of Kabbalah's Ol Mitzvos. How do we define the seemingly demand or requirement better of accepting mitzvos upon the convert? Divorce. How do we define divorce in terms of many people might be familiar. Last year there was the International Beis Din that came out in terms of the types of gittin that they were doing. Gittin has severe repercussions in terms of creating mamzerim if it's not an accepted get. So you ultimately have individuals, in terms of converts, divorced women that have major issues. And then another issue is the role of women. Obviously, the Rav put forward an idea that women should be involved in Talmud Torah and that the Talmud Torah that they should be involved in should be on a very serious level. There's no question that that is what has been accepted within the community. The question is that where does that lead us in terms of women in their roles of possibly communal roles, specifically within the shul, as women as clergy? These are very defining aspects that have creating, so to speak, a pull. And the question becomes, to what degree will this impact the future of modern Orthodoxy? It's nothing that we can necessarily present, but the question is, can we sustain a big tent is something that's going to play out, I think, certainly over the next 20 years. And I just want to close with one other variable that sometimes doesn't get discussed. A lot of the models that you hear being talked about on the side to the center left draw their inspiration from Israel and then go ahead and apply it here. As a matter of fact, one of the speakers on the panel Sunday night was a very reputable Rav from Eretz Yisrael. But the Eretz Yisrael community, Modern Orthodox community, the Dati Lumi community, is very different than what we have here in America. And Dati Lumi community in Israel is very much independent of the Haredi world. They function almost like they're people who have no connections with anything on any institutional, on any social, on any personal level, maybe just familial. But other than that, the two worlds do not collide. Our world in America is not like that, even our modern Orthodox world. So when we talk about our educational institutions, many of the mechanchim, of the rebbeim of our institutions are not YU graduates. That's just the fact. But they're graduates of yeshivos that are coming from a more Haredi institution. They're graduates of those institutions. You go to the OU, and many of the people involved in kashrus are from the Haredi world. In other words, our worlds are very much interdependent as opposed to independent. And we're only facing a future where the American Haredi world is only going to get stronger and stronger. So if we almost take a turn to the left, there has to be a sort of like a question, to what degree is that going to impact our ability in terms of our relationships, very key relationships, with the broader Haredi world in terms of, as we said, having them view us as a viable Torah camp. So just some of the issues and ideas that I think are struggling, that we're struggling with right now and that need much more further development in terms of the Big Ten concept.
Do any of the other rabbis want to comment on Rabbi Axelrod?
I would just add, I'm not going to make a thorough presentation of this. First of all, again, I want to thank the yeshiva, and I think it's a really wonderful opportunity for the yeshiva to have its rabbinic alumni get together and discuss these important issues. But just one point that I would add is, last week I was in Yeshiva University. This year I went every Wednesday to teach a couple of classes, and a boy came over to me in the Beis Medrash, one of our Talmidim, one of our alumni, one of our very finest. Rabbi Kamenetsky only gave me the very finest. And he came over to me and he asked me for advice, because he said that he and his friends from his yeshiva in Israel, he did not go to Keren Biavna, he went to yeshiva where the boys went to a wide variety of universities, some Jewish universities, some secular, purely secular universities, and he said that they're all struggling. His friends are all struggling with this very issue. How much of the culture, how much of the push to the left that Rabbi Axelrod was describing should be incorporated into their world view, and how much should be rejected. And it's not a simple question, meaning it's not something that we can easily say, you know, err on the side of Frumkeit and then just reject everything, because as Rabbi Axelrod was mentioning, the broad tent, the wide tent is an important thing. We have to be a unified community. We're not that many in number that we can afford further splintering. But at the same time, we have to stand for something. And principles have to mean something. And there is something, the word apikorsis is thrown around all the time. Usually it's said to mean somebody who disagrees with me on a minor point is said to be an apikoros. But it actually, sometimes there is something called apikorsis. It actually does mean something. And we have to stand for something. And this boy came over to me and he said that he's looking to create an organization where students from universities across the country can have direction. They need direction. He said, direction from Gedolei Yisrael, from people who understand their community, from Gedolei Yisrael within our community, just to tell us what's good and what's not, how to handle a variety of situations. And I think that's something that traditionally modern Orthodoxy maybe hasn't been as so strong at, in terms of taking direction from our Gedolei Yisrael. I mean, we're pretty good at it, but usually only after the Gedolei Yisrael have passed away. So we're still taking direction from Gedolei Yisrael, who are no longer here, for decades. But it's important that we take direction from Gedolei Yisrael, who are still with us, and that we, while we don't have the Haredi view of Das Torah, where we have to consult with our Gedolim about what brand of high chair to buy for our child, we do have a sense that Gedolei Torah have this sixth sense of what's appropriate and what's not appropriate for our community. And I think we would be well served in navigating this and many other issues if we developed some sort of greater connection with our Torah leaders.
Thank you once again to this very beautiful gathering and to all Rabbi Volk and to everybody who organized it. Just one thing to underline, something that both Rabbi Axelrod and Rabbi Leibowitz explained, and that is the great sense of tragedy that the next 20 years hold for us. Meaning we in New York, in the metropolitan area, can talk, we can philosophize, and we can discuss these issues. When you want to really see how real it is, you need to go out to areas where there are only a few shuls. You go out to San Diego, the Bay Area. You go out to areas where there is a less of a vibrant community. I was recently at a Yarche Kala with young rabbonim from all around the country. And when you have, let's say, one mikvah for a community, and there's two shuls, one which is a modern Orthodox shul, and one which is a shul which is moving further and further towards the left, and they need each other, they're codependent to work together, and now what's happening is that they're slowly drifting apart. We're all dying. The communities are dying as we split apart. We can't afford to split apart. In New York, it's fine. In New York, we have enough. We have a big enough tent. But we have to realize that it's the whole of America, it's the whole of the world, which is dependent on this, the notion of being able to hold this very important line together. Just to underline the tragedy, which is important in this split, and the hairline fractures that we're beginning to see over here as we discuss this.
Just one final 2 cents on that as the moderator. I just think, and to underscore one point about this, I think most of the people who are in attendance tonight probably would identify themselves as upholding this center position. Everybody thinks they're in the center of something. Everybody just looks at the people to the right and to the left of them and say, well, I'm the center because, you know, I look at those people that way. But I think everybody knows what I mean when I say that. And I do think that our community has a very important role to play in all of these discussions. And I think everybody sitting here has a very important role to play in these discussions. And that role is to A, be very passionate about our own positions on these issues. But at the same time, as was stressed, and Rabbi Leibowitz hinted to it in his classic, you know, one-liner, which you have to be listening very careful to pick it up from, but I'm going to try to spell it out a little bit more. When we talk about the other people who we think are a few degrees not exactly the way we are, we should feel free to argue with positions, but not to let those arguments descend into name-calling or classifying the whole world who doesn't exactly fit exactly with our narrow or whatever worldview we have to have because we're exactly in the center of the people right to the right and the left of us, to disagree with respect and to when expressing an opinion on what the authentic Torah position is on a particular issue, to treat those who are not exactly in our four amos with respect. And I think that will keep the tent broad, because I think one of the reasons we are losing people from the tent is because we are engaging in name-calling and in saying that anybody who's even slightly sniffs of a position that's not exactly ours is an apikoros. Question number 2. In thinking about the long-term growth and development of the modern Orthodox community in the U.S., how should we deal with the issue that many of our most successful graduates from modern Orthodox day schools ultimately leave our camp, either by joining the Torah-only Haredi camp or by making Aliyah and moving to Israel? How are we to face the challenge as well of those who go off the derech and leave the fold? We ask Rabbi Leibowitz to be the primary respondent to this question.
The concern of a shrinking modern orthodoxy that Rabbi Kamenetsky articulated is really three different issues, meaning the idea that was articulated was that we're sort of hemorrhaging in three different places. First, unfortunately, people going off the derech, as they say, you know, people who give up an observant lifestyle. Second, people making aliyah and moving to Israel and therefore leaving the modern Orthodox community in America, missing some of our finest. And third, people leaving modern Orthodoxy to become Haredi. And it's very important to distinguish between those three categories because, you see, one of them is a tragedy. One of them is our greatest success, And one of them is, okay, you know, could go either way, one way or the other. So I want to just focus on each one individually. Obviously, when people give up an Orthodox lifestyle and they no longer observe Torah and mitzvos, that's a tragedy. It's a tragedy for Klal Yisrael. Every mitzvah is important, and it's something that we have to think hard about in terms of how to inspire our children, how to make Judaism something that's alive enough, interesting enough, that they don't want to opt out. You know, I spoke to whenever I need to speak at an important event, I consult with who you would think that you should consult with, my 11th graders, and I asked them, you know, what do you think about this question? And they said, you know, the going off the derech thing, you know, there will always be people that do that. There's nothing you can really do about that. And that was very depressing to hear that was the reaction. We can't believe that. We can't accept it, and we can't believe that there's nothing we could do about it. In fact, in DRS, we've had, in years past, someone who came and used to do a presentation that was essentially a Kiruv presentation. But he was talking to Frum kids who grew up Frum their whole life. And he explained, I'm doing a Kiruv presentation because the Kiruv world is moving away from Kiruv Rechokim and moving toward Kiruv Krovim. Because there's a recognition that there are a lot of people who just, Judaism isn't talking to them, even if they're still going through the motions, and they need to be more inspired. They need to understand things and be inspired by what our religion has to offer. Just this past Pesach, I happened to have been in Florida, and I went to visit, went down the block to another program to one of our alumni also, who was delivering a talk in another hotel. And his talk was very entertaining, it was phenomenal, it was outstanding. It was Kiruv. I mean, if you would hear it, he was talking to a very firm audience of black hats, and he was doing Kiruv. And it was like stunning to me. And I looked around, and everyone was, they were lapping it up. They were loving it because they needed it. We all need it. We all need that level of inspiration. So I think our generation in particular, since there are so many options out there, we need to emphasize the positive sides of Yiddishkeit. You know, it used to be that before Yom Noraim, for example, you'd highlight Emas Hadin. You know, God is going to be angry and he's going to punish. Nowadays, you know, a kid hears that and he goes, I have enough trouble in my life. I don't need this also. So it's not going to connect with him. No, we highlight the opportunity we have of Anila Dodi V'Dodi Li, of closeness to God, and that could be uplifting and that could be inspiring. And you hear it. You hear the subtle changes in the way Gedol and the way Rashi yeshivas and the firmest yeshivas now talk about things like the Yom Narayim in a much more positive way, much less of a scary negative way. It's also important to realize that there are a lot of adults that go off the derech, at least privately, that stop observing Torah mitzvos. And I think part of the great success of Neo Chasidus or whatever you want to call it is the inspiration and the positive message that it provides. I don't think it has to be done through Hasidus per se. That's one language that people connect to. I mean, you look at successful Rabbanim, and then not just the ones that are on this stage, but you look at successful Rabbanim around the community, and you see it's done in a variety of ways. You take another KBY alumnus, Rabbi Eitan Feiner, he's doing a great job inspiring people just by the sheer force of his Torah. And that can also be done, but it has to be alive, and it has to be inspiring. I think also a lot of the demonizing of secular college may be somewhat misplaced. What I mean by that is that, not that I think it's a great thing for all of our kids to go to secular college, but I think it's more of an indication of where kids are holding, rather than this threat to take already good, committed kids and turn them sour. I was talking to Professor Mark Shapiro on Pesach, and he was telling me that in all of his years on secular college campuses, he's seen a lot of kids come in with yarmulkes and take off their yarmulkes. It's always in the first week. He said if a kid is still wearing his yarmulke a month into college, he's going to wear it for 4 years. He's going to be frum for 4 years. He said the better argument against secular college is that you're not going to have as much chance to learn as you would in Yeshiva University or Landers or a Torah environment, and that if a kid wants to go to a place where it's so easy to take off his yarmulke in the first week, the problem already exists beforehand. So we need to address the problem at the ground level before it becomes obvious, before it becomes evident. Now that's category one. Making aliyah, you know, that's the ultimate success. It's very hard to lament losing talent when, you know, a kid tells his parents, I'm going to make Aliyah, I'm going to move to Israel. Why would you do that? We're going to miss you. It's all you've ever taught me my whole life. It's my entire education was how great Israel is, how much we love the land, how much we love, we hope that the Medina will turn into, will continue to develop and turn into something that we're, that's going to bring the Geula for those who speak about it in terms of Geula. And I find that when good people make Aliyah, you know, we've suffered the losses in my shul, or as I say, Shepta Nachas, that we've had people who've made that commitment to make Aliyah, and it's inspiring for the rest of us. You know, every once in a while you need a shot in the arm, and seeing someone who's willing to go and willing to, you know, put his money where his mouth is and say that this is important enough to me that I'm going to uproot my family, it's very hard to lament something like that. You know, there's a rabbi, Jeremy Stern, who runs an organization called ORA, which deals with the resolution of Agunos, and he likes to say that his goal is to put himself out of business. That if he was ultimately successful, there would be no more Aguna problems to solve. So I think modern Orthodoxy in America, in a certain sense, as far as Aliyah is concerned, our goal should be to put ourselves out of business. Halavai, we should all make Aliyah, we should all move to Eretz Yisrael, and then and we won't have such a great modern Orthodox community in America, but imagine what that will do for the Israeli community. And then the third group, becoming Haredi, it's hard for me to view that as a tragedy. I do believe that within the world of Torah and Mitzvos, that there are different brands of Judaism that appeal to different people. My parents, thank God, have been zocha to raise 5 children who are all Shomrei Torah and Mitzvos, but each in our own way. You know, 3 out of 5 of us, I would say, are firmly in the modern Orthodox world. One of my siblings is sort of in between modern Orthodox and Haredi Judaism, and one of them is as Haredi as you can be. And that's what works for her. And she's happy, and my brother-in-law's happy, and they're, I don't even know how many children are happy. A lot of them, they're all happy, and they're doing great. And that, and they're Shomrei Torah Mitzvos and Yirei Shemayim. And it's not a tragedy. I think a certain amount of cross-pollination is good. It's healthy. From both sides. You know, we've had in DRS, and Rabbi Kamenetsky can certainly speak to this, we've had kids switch from, I guess, what you would call the more right-wing yeshivas, and it used to be that if you know, at least the feeling I would get, I can't speak for Rabbi Kamenetsky, is that if a kid was switching, you got the sense that maybe he's headed in the wrong direction, that maybe he's not coming to be the best kid in DRS, that he was sort of going in the wrong direction. But we found a lot of times, and a lot of times, you know, they would say, why are you leaving the yeshiva? Because we had an agreement that I'm no longer welcome there, or no, but a lot of times we had hashkafic differences. So sometimes it means, yeah, their hashkafa was that they want me to observe Torah and Mitzvos, and my hashkafa is that I don't want to, so I need out. But we're finding more and more often that they actually have hashkafic differences. Not every kid is so comfortable in the world that they grew up in. And within the realm of Shomrei Torah and Mitzvos, thank God we have some variety. And I think cross-pollination is good. Now, obviously, one has to be concerned with the economics of what that means, certainly if it were my kid that were deciding, you know what, Abba, I'm going to go learn in Kollel the rest of my life. Don't worry, I'll send you all the bills on time. You know, I would obviously be concerned about how that would all work out. But I think the bigger economic crisis is within our community. I think the economic crisis in our community is much, much greater, at least here in America, because the cost of entry to the modern Orthodox community, and I can say this now as a rabbi who deals with people who are struggling, just the cost of being a member of the modern Orthodox world is great. It's a very, very great cost. You know, in Israel you can find an Orthodox bus driver. You can find an Orthodox taxi driver. You can find a garbage man. You can find people. In our community, it's very, very expensive. And I don't know what the answer is to that crisis. But, you know, sometimes it's easier to point fingers and talk about economic crises that are created by other outlooks. We have to look at the economic crises that are created by our outlooks as well. But I think that's just a broad overview of the three areas. The one area that we want to stem the tide as much as possible, the one area that we want to push that tide as much as possible, and the one area where hopefully a healthy amount of cross-pollination will cancel it out.
So I also want to echo Rabbi Leibowitz said in terms of, obviously, in terms of the Aliyah issue, that's the mark of our tremendous success. Whenever you take a look, I know I always, you know, enjoy looking at those Nefesh B'Nefesh videos, and each one of the people usually who comes off the plane is really representative of the success. As I mentioned, one of the hallmarks of our community is religious Zionism. And it's not just walking down Fifth Avenue for the parade to support Israel. It's actually ultimately making that ultimate commitment of making Aliyah. And so much of our community is now living, whether in Ramat Beit Shemesh or Ranana, and they are actively participating in the destiny of the Jewish people, but also really representative of, and there are many KBY alumni who are part of it, representative of being involved in the economic workforce and are representative of a certain mark of success of our American community. In terms of the off the derech issue, as well as also in terms of those who adopt a more Haredi lifestyle, one of the things that I think an issue that should have some focus is the fact that unlike the other streams within Orthodoxy, especially within the right-wing world, in the Hasidic world and in the Yeshivish world, their hashkafas hachayim, meaning to say their worldview, what does it mean to be a Vishnitz Chassid? What does it mean to be learning in Lakewood Cheder? So those are basically systems that are almost cradle to grave. Meaning to say it's been mapped out. How are we going to get a person to go from the cradle to be within that particular system their entire life? But it's certainly with a great focus in terms of their education. Now it's true, there is a fallout rate. I think the rate that they cause in the more Haredi world, the percentage that they throw out, I've heard is about 5%. There's a 5% rate that doesn't sort of make it, that isn't successful. But by and large, there's a success in terms of their product by virtue of the fact that they're teaching it as a shita, meaning as a way of life. The child knows their mission, so to speak, their task. As they grow from whether they're in the Beis Yaakov system and or the yeshiva system, and then they go to the Masifta, and then they go to Beis Medrash, then they go to Eretz Yisrael, and then Kol, it's a system. And it's supposed, ideally, to make whatever they hold to be the ultimate product. In the modern Orthodox world, in the educational world, and speaking not leaving aside my position as a pulpit rabbi, but speaking more from being familiar with the educational system, our educational system was never set up that way. There was never that strategy in terms of how we're going to have the most optimum levels of success from our students from the viewpoint of modern Orthodoxy. So you ask a school, what are you doing? What is the plan to make sure that this person, male or female, is going to be as an adult, a modern Orthodox adult, based on the levels of success that we identified in the beginning in terms of their engagement in the world, in terms of their commitment to Torah mitzvos, in terms of them being a passionate religious Zionist, in terms of their engagement in all aspects, in terms of the broader world. There's no official plan. It's not taught. Every school is doing their own thing. Every yeshiva is doing their own thing. And the whole entire system is really not a system that's leading towards a particular ideology, of even a broader ideology that could have a lot of different facets and colors and distinctions within it. So the students very often go to Israel or go to some other institution, leaving the home. They've been in our communities for 12 years, but really no one's necessarily told them what to do. Or they go to the secular campus and they just don't know. Now, Baruch Hashem, that student, I believe, it's turned to you. But there are many, not many, there are hundreds of now, perhaps thousands, of our modern Orthodox students on secular campuses, and they're struggling. Now, why should a kid, after going through 12 years of a modern Orthodox high school, hundreds of thousands of communal and personal dollars into each one of these children, you would think that after the first week, they wouldn't be taking off the yarmulke or trying out the non-kosher meal plan. And that's a testimony, I think, to the fact that we need to focus a little bit. If we're going to have a strong community, we need to have like a planning session or discussions in terms of how we're going to achieve it. Remember when I was in one particular educational setting, we had 10 people in a room discuss the whole Tanakh department, talking about the Tanakh, Tanakh was going to be taught over the course of the year. And that's certainly important. But I don't know if there's ever been a gathering of 10 people thinking about on the, so to speak, the system-wide level of our, we'll call it Torah Mada schools, how are we going to try and achieve the goal? And I think if we did so, we would have a stronger result in terms of the populations that encompasses our community.
I think that one of the reasons that our kids veer to the right is because some of them smell mediocrity. And they can also smell hypocrisy. I think that if we would be very, very passionate about our commitment to that which we are committed to, obviously, this is a generalization. There are plenty of people who go to different sections of within Orthodoxy for a host of reasons, and we don't have all the time in the world to discuss all the different aspects. But one of the things I think I say, people in this room, what we can do is we can make sure that we are passionate about our positions and that we don't view our own positions as b'di'eved, as a second rate option, what can we do? This is our philosophy. We believe passionately and strongly in that which we believe in, and we don't view it to be a compromise. It's not a compromise. Modern Orthodoxy should not be viewed to our kids as a compromise. It's something that the Torah has, as has been said a few times, the Torah has what to say about the entire world. The Torah teaches us how to engage the modern world. And if we have to be very careful about not making compromises. I think that in some places, I think in our community less, but in some cases, there are people who take liberties in the name of modern Orthodoxy that are not really in the name of modern Orthodoxy, that not really permitted. And I think that's one of the reasons that our kids move more to the right, because their perception is, it's a mistaken perception, but their perception is that what modern Orthodoxy means is you're allowed to compromise on certain things. And we have to be very, very careful to know, and this goes through, as was mentioned before, following the Shulchan Aruch and following the directions of our Gedolei Torah in terms of translating the Shulchan Aruch to real life situations and being that strong center. The only other thing I want to add is that I think that 30, 40 years ago, that's talking about more the people who drift more to the right. In terms of the people who fall off the derech, I think 30, 40 years ago, the people who are off the derech were more the angry, rebellious types of people. They were wilder, and it was actually easier to try to get those people to refocus and redirect towards Yiddishkeit. I think the bigger problem that we're having today with people falling off Halavai, it should be that people were angry and rebellious and so energized and passionate about how bad everything is. Then at least there's a passion and an energy with which to engage and to show and to redirect that passion, that energy. What we're seeing in the last 10, 15 years more, I think, is just a complete apathy. We're raising a generation of kids that are relationship challenged, that have the whole world at their fingertips and so much excitement and so many ideas. I spent today talking to a 14-year-old boy who I couldn't believe was talking like a 17, 18-year-old boy with arguments about why God doesn't exist. That I wouldn't have expected, a 14-year-old boy to have contemplated, forget about to have like 17 reasons and 14 proofs and 13 things about, because it's so accessible. Information is accessible. Ideas are accessible. And kids can retreat into their phones and just waste away hours and hours and hours of not engaging with anybody or anything. And I think also that as family stresses multiply, as Rabbi Leibowitz said, that just to enter into our community requires so much money.
So it requires both parents holding down, you know, multiple jobs so the kids aren't getting as much attention. And because of that, there are relationship issues. I've said many times, and again, at the risk of generalities, obviously there's exceptions to this, but many, many times you'll find that a child that is lacking in their relationship with their biological parents will very, very oftentimes find a lacking in their relationship with their father in heaven, because it's their relationship challenged. Once a child is relationship challenged and doesn't have that connection, it's not me saying this, it's a Ramban. The Ramban says that the whole point of the mitzvah of Kibud Av Va'Em is to sensitize people to being able to have a relationship with their father in heaven. That's the whole reason why Judaism places such emphasis on respect for elders, respect for parents, respect for Torah scholars. So in the generation, because we're such a busy generation that we don't have, you know, each of us has, you know, two cell phones in both pockets and each of us are running to respond to all the slew of stuff that's coming at us. So a lot of our kids, many of our kids are lacking in that relationship and connection. And I think that they're just finding a lot more connection on the internet, finding a lot more connection. So the answer to that is that we have to teach the kids what real relationships are, teach the kids about how beautiful a real relationship is, try to get them for a few minutes to disconnect in order to connect to people, to ideas, to family, to their parents, to a passionate, beautiful, as was said before, positive and exciting and enriching modern orthodoxy that has a lot to give to them. Obviously, hours and hours could be spoken about this, but that's what we'll have to suffice with now. And finally, the third question. And we'll ask Rabbi Trump to respond to this question. Much has been written about the current conflict between modernity and religion. As the larger American community becomes more liberal and secular, how do we raise the next generation to withstand the anti-Torah value system which pervades the general society? Rabbi Trump.
Good evening, everybody. And once again, Birshus, Rabbi Kamenetsky, Rabbi Axelrod, Rabbi Leibowitz. Thank you, Rabbi Volkt, for putting this very special evening together. What is, in fact, the greatest danger which faces a society which engages? What is the greatest threat to a society which has its feet in two worlds? As Trump, I would say that the solution would be to build a very, very tall wall. But I don't believe that would be even within the biggest fringes of the tent of modern orthodoxy. Many would tell you that the threat that is facing us, the greatest threat with engagement with the world, would come in the cerebral realm. When we engage with ideas which contravene the Torah, whether it be in the scientific field, evolution, the age of the universe, in psychology, deterministic theology, literature, when it comes to biblical criticism, documentary hypothesis, when we talk about in contemporary society, the role of gender, identity itself, people switching backwards and forwards, ideas. But I would actually argue that, in fact, the greatest threat that we face is not in the realm of the head, but in the realm of the heart. These ideas, for the most part, have been questions for decades, if not centuries. They have intensified as the world has intensified. But nonetheless, they're not the new challenges, they're not the greatest threat to us. I believe that as we live in two worlds at once, we live in the world of the shul and the boardroom, the world of svarim and the world of tax reports, the world of modesty and taras mishpacha and transgender bathrooms. We live in both these worlds, sedarim and office parties. We encounter the danger of engagement stems from the heart, from the emotions, more than the head. Let's be honest, our kids are not falling off the side because they're having illicit relationships with Nietzsche in college campuses in late nights. The issue we're having over here is an issue, as Rabbi Kabanetsky just mentioned, is an issue of passion. The passion is for the following reason. You know, there's a pasuk in Mishlei which says, V'ish l'fi mahalaloi. A person according to their praise. If you want to understand a person, you want to identify what really moves the person, what really matters to a person, what should you do? Ish lefi mahalaloi, according to their praise. What does that mean? So you know what it is? Rashi says that the pshat is that you go and you see, you ask the surrounding people and you ask them, what about this person? They'll praise that person. When you hear the report, that's how you get a sense of them. You call up, what about this person for a shidduch? And there's a long silence. They're a nice person. You realize, ish lefi mahalaloi, you get a sense of what the kind of person they are. However, Rabbeinu Yonah says the most incredible thing. Ish lefi mahalaloi doesn't mean to say that you understand a person how others praise them. You understand a person based on what they praise, what they care about, what moves them. That's how you understand what a person is. Interestingly enough, when we look around the world around us, you think, well, maybe there isn't so much passion out there. After all, you know, there's a famous poem by William Butler Yeats called The Second Coming, written in 1919. And in it, he has a very depressing line which says, the best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. And you think about today. You know, you look out to the east, and you see these radical people who are willing to chop off the heads of others publicly, to kill, to rape, to pillage, in the name of religion. And here we are, trying to work out how to pass a bill to maybe send a few bombs in their direction. And you think, where is the passion of freedom? Where is the passion about the ideals we belong to? But I believe that Butler Yeats was wrong. I believe that he was wrong in identifying our society. Because we do have passion in our society. We have an incredible amount of passion in our society. Look at the signage in our society. Go look at the garden, Madison Square Garden. Look at the 30-story advertisements that are along the side of it. What do we hold? What do we put into our glass boxes? What do we esteem? What do we praise in society? Well, most recently it was the Rangers win. I remember there was a time I was walking through the garden and it was a 30-foot picture of Shrek, which had just come out. Shrek 3 had just come out. You understand, when you go to Gaza City and you see the signs in the street, you know what the signs are? They're signs of Shahid, of the martyr who just killed themselves for Israel against the occupiers. That's what matters to them. That's their passion. What's our passion? We have passion. We're not ambivalent. We're not apathetic. Our passion is entertainment. The society we're engaging in is a society which is passionate about one thing and one thing only. And that's entertainment in the consumer world. It's a billion-dollar industry. That's our passions. You know the problem is as modern Orthodox individuals with feet in both realms, it's hard to be passionate about a lot of things. Our heart has a certain capacity. We only have a certain bandwidth of emotional care, of how much we can care. The greatest threat to the modern Orthodox society is not necessarily the ideas we engage in the rising postmodern society of the 21st century. It's how much can we possibly have the capacity to care for. And this gets translated to ourselves by cognitive dissonance, and it gets translated to the people around us, most definitely our kids, as Rabbi Kamenetsky was saying. The way the Gemara says it is, Omar Rabbi Eloi in Eruvin, Bishloishu Dvarim Adam Nikar, Bekoiso, Bekiso, Bekaso, the three chafs. A person is recognized in three places. Where do you know what a person really is? One of them is Bekoiso, when they drink, when they're intoxicated. Other one is Bekaso, at an emotionally heightened stage in their life, when they're angry. Another one is Bekiso, what they spend money on. You know, our kids are watching us. Our kids are watching us. They understand. They understand when we come back grumbling after 3-day yontas. Whew, shower for 3 days. They understand when we come to shul 10 minutes late, leave 10 minutes early, and on our cell phones for the middle 10 minutes. They understand that. And they also see the same parents who are going and buying tickets for who knows what amount of money to get to a specific game at the season end. Our kids, we understand what is passionate in our lives too. We have to ask ourselves, what are we passionate about? Do we have the capacity to care about the things which are enriching? Is Torah a centerpiece of a society as well? And make no mistake that when we're able to, when the things that matter in our lives are surrounded by Torah, are the ideas, the values of connecting with God, those moments that we have with Hashem, understand the tremendous Kiddush Hashem that we ourselves notice and our kids notice. When you go out of your way, you take your kids to Tom Chay Shabbos on a Thursday night, you do things. You do things with your kids. You do things which care, which show that it's within our realm. You go out there, you make the most tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Just 2 years ago, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs was at YU, And he spoke to the IBC program, and he said a most unusual idea. And he was talking about the challenges of modern orthodoxy and being a person engaged in the world. And he went back to the perhaps the first people who had to be different. And he went to the person who was first called the different person. Who was the most different person of the society at the beginning? That person was the person who was called Ha'ivri, the other one, the other side. Who is he? Abraham himself. Avraham Ha'ivri. Avraham and his prodigy, Lot, the person who could have been, were two people who had engaged the world and had to separate themselves from the world. How did they do it? They worked differently. Lot said, you know, I can't deal with it. They couldn't stay together. He went to Kikar HaYarden. He went to the area of the Dead Sea. And you know what he did? He invested in society there. In fact, he was sitting by the Shaar Ha'ir. He invested completely and wholly in society. He, of course, maintained the chesed of Avraham Avinu. But nonetheless, he was a judge in society, the Chazal tell us. That's why he was sitting by the gate. You know what the irony is? The irony is, at the end of the day, when he started telling everybody about the ideals, that he wanted to defend his guests, you know what they said to him? They said, who made you a judge of us? He integrated to the point where he thought he'd be so much a part of their society. You know what the society said to him in the end? Goodbye. Who are you to judge us? Talk about Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu never integrated into the cities. Avraham Avinu remained an isolated person, an iconoclast. He remained a person who stayed in the desert and people came to visit him. He washed their feet off the dust of the Avodah Zarah when they came into his place. But should society around them be threatened? Should there be a Sodom at stake? You'd pray for them. Should there be a fight, a civil war, four kings, five kings? He'd take every last man of his house to be able to fight against them because he cared. They said, you know what, you want an investment? We'll pay you for this. You've invested so much in our society. Mechut v'adstroch now. I'm not going to take anything from your society. I'm going to care about your society. I'm going to enrich your society. But ultimately, I've pegged my tent in a place which is outside of your society because that's where my anchor is. That's where my passion is. You know what the interesting thing is? When Avraham Avinu, in the end of the day, negotiates with society, when you have the Hittites now having this very, very hard-nosed negotiation about how much to pay for the land of the burial plots of Maras and Machpelah, what is the way that they treat him? They say to him, Avram, Nesi Elohim Atabasachenu. You're the Prince of God. The Prince of God. The person who had his ideals straight, the person who understood where they were coming from, when they engaged, was the person that people said, you know what, you're the Prince of God. It's a very interesting dynamic. It's a very challenging dynamic. But it's a dynamic which we need to remember, is that we as human beings are bombarded as we look at our inbox every day from every side to care about so many things. We can only care about so much. And the question is going to be is, where do we put that so much? Where do we invest that? That, I believe, is the greatest challenge of our engagement with the world, which is a unique challenge which we as modern Orthodox Jews face because specifically of our engagement. I thank you very much.
If only the other Trump was as bright, thoughtful, and articulate as this one. Just one halachic point. I think the showering thing we could talk about on a 3-day yantif, maybe for a different forum, perhaps. Just as Rabbi Trump was so eloquently speaking about the passion that we need to have and what we put our energies into and our passion into, I recall a conversation I had with my chavrusa right after he made Aliyah, and I was asking him what's the biggest difference. I don't know if I actually asked that, but it's the answer he gave, answered that question. The biggest difference between living here and raising your children here and raising your children in Israel. And he said he thinks the biggest difference is that there's no shtuyot in his children's life. Those were the words he used. There's no shtuyot. They're not into the newest movie, the newest gadget, the newest, a sporting event. They're into Teulim and history and Zionism. It's an entirely different focus. And I think we have a lot to learn from there. Now it's a double-edged sword because a kid sometimes, does need a little bit of leisure, but certainly the emphasis that we place in our world on things that ultimately don't really matter I happen to be a sports fan, so it's easy for me to say this. The emphasis that we place on sports is entirely unhealthy. I mean, as a society and as a community, we place way too much emphasis. But I'd rather end on at least from my part tonight, on a positive message. I remember a number of years ago, it was probably my second or third year teaching in DRS, and there was a particular challenge. I don't want to get into the specifics of it now, but that worried me a great deal about the future of the teenagers of our community and the future of our community in general. And I wasn't sure how our community was going to overcome this challenge. I remember speaking to my class and asking them, you know, how many of you struggle with this issue? And it was a rookie mistake. It was not a question that I should have asked in a public forum, because as soon as one kid raises his hand, he says, "Rabbi, present company excluded, I would say 100% of the rest of the school. No one in this classroom, but 100% of the rest of the school." And I realized that there, whatever the issue was, that if there was someone who thought that maybe it was wrong and maybe he should hesitate a little bit, now he realized that the whole rest of the world does it, so it must not be that bad. And I was very depressed. And I asked my Rebbe, Rav Schechter, you know, how do you deal with something like this? What's the future of Klal Yisrael going to be? And he said something that was so important and so profound. And he said that there were so many times in history where we thought, how's Torah going to survive this? How is Yiddishkeit going to survive this? How enticing this ideal is, how enticing this movement is, and then it used to be there was really not much else to do, but then there were books, and there was television, and there was all sorts of other influences, let alone the kinds of influences we're exposed to today. And he said, you know what? Torah continues to survive. And it's something after 17 years of teaching, you look at these, I see young men, and it's true of our young women as well, but I get to see the young men every day, and it's amazing that they're into learning, and that they become passionate about Torah. Because Torah is that powerful. What we're selling, what we're giving, the Mesorah that we're passing on, is really that great. It's something worth having a passion for, and I think our children ultimately will pick up on that.
So just obviously to echo what the other rabbi said in terms of raising the next generation to withstand the anti-Torah value system that pervades our general society, so to the degree that we're passionate and that we inspire our youth and our young people in terms of Torah mitzvot, as well as what I said before also, I think that if they know that there's a derech hachayim in terms of what it means to be modern Orthodox, in other words, what does it mean for a sixth grader, a seventh grader, or a tenth grader, or a twelfth grader? What does their modern orthodoxy, how does that guide what websites they go to? How does that guide what music they listen to? And if you ask the average one, that goes back to at least my comment before, because there's no frame of reference, there is no shita, there's no derech hachayim. You ask the visionist, a kid in Kiryat's visits in Muncie, what he should be doing, how he should be behaving in a certain way, he knows. But you ask our kids, and in a certain way, we haven't really given them the tools. And they're living in a very complicated world, a very challenging world. And in a way, for example, let's say Rabbi Billet has suggested that not every youngster requires a phone that has internet access. And that's something we sort of have to ask ourselves. Now, on the one hand, as we said, is we're not for building the walls, and we're not saying no internet in the home, and that's not our way, because of course we recognize and appreciate and realize all of our lives have been enhanced by it. But to what degree are we giving a chinuch to our children in terms of balancing that? And it affects all different aspects of relationships, of human relationships, of social relationships. I'm sure you've all gone to the bar mitzvahs, and rather than dancing with the baal simcha, their friend, they're off on the side checking the scores. That ultimately has an impact on so many different aspects of their relationships, of the shalom bias that we see within our communities, and so forth. So that's certainly important. But I also just want to talk about something that I think needs addressing, which is the following. There are a host of challenges that the broader modern Orthodox community is facing. And we sort of need to come up, and it's not necessarily for this panel, but we need to come up to be able to articulate to young people in terms of challenges, as we've mentioned, in terms of gender identity, in terms of defining marriage, in terms of sexuality. Core values of society are changing, and we need to have, so to speak, the language to articulate. The language that was used previously will not probably work. Bahavdil, like Rav Hirsch, had to come up with a language to address what was going on in the Frankfurt on the Main in his time. We also, within our modern Orthodox community, have to formulate positions, but be able to articulate and to give over the Mesorah, so to speak, in terms of these particular issues that will resonate in terms of giving them direction. And also, to end on a positive note, as someone who's been in the broader world a little bit, especially in within the modern Orthodox world, my whole life has not necessarily been Woodmere. We live in a bubble. We are very much in a bubble. And the outside modern Orthodox world is not the five towns. However, we can do, what we can do is we could see ourselves to a certain degree as a paradigm of a certain type of community that I think can give level of direction. There are many shuls that, let's say, struggle to have a large crowd early in the morning. There are many shuls that and communities that struggle to have schools that have a level of passion being taught both in to both the males and the females in the co-ed schools. And so our school system that we have here, the shuls that we have here, the fact that we have such a leadership within the on the rabbinic level, and those that many of them who are not represented here, we can offer, I believe, a certain vision and impact the modern Orthodox community, not for just our own community. We could break the bubble, and we can begin over, hopefully over the coming years, to think about how what we're creating in the broader, larger Five Towns community can be a model that can be replicated in other modern Orthodox communities, to have a passionate, to have a strong level of observance and commitment to the principles that we mentioned early on that define us as a Torah community.
We promised a couple of time for questions at the end.
I think I've spoken enough, so I'd love to maybe just a couple of questions. Anyone who has any questions, either on what we spoke about or other issues under the broad question of modern Orthodoxy. Yes, still on.
Just the moderator, so
I think that's part of it, right? If we begin to have a conversation of how we're going to give this over as a Derech HaChaim, it's my own personal view. I don't know if I'm on. We're taped now, but it's my own personal view that if we don't do this, our community is going to be extremely challenged in the years ahead. We need to do this because we'll only get stronger from it. So, for example, if you had a whole curriculum and a whole system that's based on it, part of it would be exposing the young people to, so to speak, our heroes that are not necessarily of a rabbinic nature. But the heroes of the modern Orthodox community are the people who are successful in the worlds of medicine, in law, in finance, in all those areas who represent the models, the model living that life that we seek to achieve. So I think that concept that it shouldn't just be the rebbeim or the rabbis that they're exposed to, but to be exposed to the whole spectrum of those who are successful in leading a modern Orthodox life. It could be also, you know, someone who's involved in the world of drama, in the world of journalism, all different facets of life they need to be exposed to those models who are living the life.
Yeah, I would just say, I think a very small percentage of our graduates go off to be rabbis. I would probably like more of them, maybe, to go into Jewish communal service. But Mr. Lonnie, also, if you send me a picture of you, I'm happy to put it right up on the classroom. I'll put it right up. But 100% agree. And I think that most of our schools, if anything, it's the opposite. I don't think we have an issue that too many of our kids are becoming rabbis, but I totally agree that we're producing, generally speaking, good balabatim.